Now, for the show that brings combat sports stories to life from the great state of Ohio, this is Forged in Ohio.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 13 of Forged in Ohio. My name is Jake Murren, and I'm the host of this podcast. Before I introduce today's guest, I have a huge announcement regarding the show. I will no longer be posting Forged in Ohio content on my personal Instagram at Jake_Murren. Because with the launch of this huge episode with a huge guest, by the way, I'll be launching a separate Forged in Ohio Instagram page. It's been long overdue, and all you have to do is search Forged in Ohio and you'll find it. I'll be promoting interviews, fighters, new episode drops, highlights, and more, all on that one page from here on out. So please go check it out, support the podcast, and give it a follow. With that being said, let's get to the man that you have all tuned in to hear from. He won his professional MMA debut just a few weeks ago at Ohio Combat League 23. He's also a multi-amateur champion in mixed martial arts. Just from word of mouth alone, I've heard this is one of the best fighters in the state of Ohio. He is Josh, the Flying Hawaiian Pereira. Thanks for coming on the show, Josh, and welcome to Forged in Ohio.
Thank you. Thank you for having me, brother. I really appreciate you. Thank you.
The honor's all mine getting you on Forge in Ohio. Like I said, I've been watching you for a long time, and I want to start with your background before we get into your recent win on January 7th. You're from Hawaii, but you fight out of Columbus. What was your upbringing like in Hawaii, and what ultimately brought you to Ohio?
I had a very good upbringing, a loving family back home in Hawaii, on Oahu, originally from Kailua side. I always visit every so often, but after high school, I was supposed to move out join the military. That didn't work out. Then I went to into drinking a little bit, kind of lost my path. I was always a martial artist growing up. Started off with Jeet Kune Do, then capoeira. Then I did judo all throughout high school, and then picked up some more and more martial arts, capoeira. Then mix it all together. And then I kind of, yet again, fell away from it. Started drinking, kind of messing up my home life. But I had the opportunity to move out here. A very good friend of mine helped open up a parkour gym and gymnastics gym. So I jumped on that opportunity just to explore the mainland. My parents always said, you know, give the mainland a try. But, you know, you can take the boy out of Hawaii, but you can't take Hawaii out of the boy. But I was trying to get a boxing match while I was out here, and for the Arnold Classic, that fell through because I thought I was Rocky Balboa running in the snow, and I got pneumonia. But yeah, then I started drinking again, sadly. And then one day I went to a bar up close to my work, Rude Dog Bar and Grill, and I met my coach, Matt Brown, there. And I was like, holy crap, that's Matt Brown. Went up, introduced myself, told him about my situation. He was like, yeah, bro, we'll get you in here as soon as possible. And then I was like, okay, go. Cool, dope. And then Israel Adesanya walks in too. He had just gotten done with his press conference for, I believe it was his Kelvin Gastelum fight, the interim middleweight belt in Cleveland. And he could come down here. And there's, I think John Jones was fighting Anthony Smith at the time. And I remember I've never fangirled in my whole life, but I walked up to him. I was like, oh, man, can I get your autograph? And he looked at me up and down. He's like, yeah, of course. Hey, where are you from? You don't look like you're from around here. And I was like, oh, I'm originally from Hawaii. I'm Filipino, mixed kid, you know. And he said, oh, you got that Manny Pacquiao in you too. I was like, yeah. And one thing led to another. He pointed to Matt. He was like, that's where you start. That's where you start your journey. And that's what led me to Immortal and led me to Matt, Mark the Hammer Coleman, all my training partners, Lucas Siebert, Cam Jenkins, Cameron Sullivan. Yeah, just I'm a martial artist first and a fighter second, always looking to improve myself. And every single fight is just a snapshot or a picture of what my whole journey has come to. But always looking to improve myself, always, nonstop.
Yeah, that's an incredible story. I have to ask a couple follow-ups about that bar story. I mean, was it just a complete coincidence that not only Matt Brown was there, but also Israel Adesanya?
I had no idea both of them were going to be there. It was just like, there's just like certain things that happen in your life that like leads you like to something, you know, like maybe it was the big man upstairs telling me to get my life in order. Maybe it was luck, but no matter what, I'm blessed and humbled by the opportunity to meet and just be anywhere, you know?
Yeah, definitely a sign and maybe fate that you did run into them that day in that bar. Another thing about that story, though, Israel Adesanya, it makes sense for him to be in a Ohio bar if he was fighting in Ohio. Certainly makes sense for Matt Brown to be in a bar in Ohio. But was there a connection between Israel Adesanya and Matt Brown? Like, was he going there to meet Matt Brown at the bar?
I don't think so. It was right after a press conference, and it was just out of pure luck.
Wow.
Yet again, like you said, fate. And I remember I was looking up to Izzy a lot, and I also looked up to Matt a lot as well. So seeing two of some of the best strikers and best mixed martial artists of the sport being in the same place at the same time, yet again, fate.
Right. Has there been any further meetings between you and Izzy? I know Izzy's gone on a huge run, unfortunately just lost to Alex Bejeda, but has there been any reconnection between you two?
No. It was just that quick stroke of luck, and I hope to meet him down the line. I remember watching his kickboxing matches when he was in China. Yet again, I would love to go and meet him again.
Yeah, I'm sure. Looking back to that moment in the bar, how quickly after that, you know, you had that discussion with Matt Brown getting into Immortal, how soon after that day did you actually get work in and officially join the ranks of everybody at the Immortal gym?
A couple months. It took me some time to get a good chunk of change, a good chunk of money to take care of memberships and everything like that. At first, I was only doing drop-in classes. Yeah, right after that, I had walked up to our gym fight manager, and I went up to him. I was like, I don't care if I get beat up my first fight. I just want to know what it likes. I want to know what it's like to be in there, because we used to draw circles in the sand on the beach and put boxing gloves on, no mouth guard or nothing, and just scrap, or we would grapple in the backyard or scrap in the backyard, you know, because I had no idea if I was any good. So I wanted to test the water. And I took my first fight on a week's notice, and it was my most important fight. I lost. Rear naked choke. You know, everybody wants to be a flashy striker. Everybody wants that. But being a mixed martial artist is so much more. After that, I didn't know anything about wrestling just yet.
Yeah.
And started mixing it all together. Took my next fight in October. This was right in the middle of quarantine as well. And they had just closed down the gym. So me and my good friend Eddie, who's in charge of the Immortal Diet plan as well, we would just go to the park and just run laps and hit pads nonstop. And then took my next fight and went on a bit of a tear. Just kept upping it up and up and up every single time.
Yeah, I think of saying it's a bit of a tear is an understatement. You went on a huge run as an amateur, of course, now a 1-0 pro. And I want to get into those fights here in a minute. I do want to go back to your Hawaiian roots here for just a second. You mentioned those different disciplines that you got involved with. You move out to Ohio. You were initially interested in getting into boxing. Your friend opened a park or gym. I'm just interested, what initially sparked your interest in MMA?
Being from Hawaii, everybody knows how to fight there. Everybody trains. I went down to the UFC, BJ Penn gym a couple times before I ended up moving out here as well, getting some great classes and getting some good basics in. But yet again, I fell in love with the striking art first. I love striking. It's not just standing and banging, you know, you cut your angles, your head movement, everything can be used as a feint. Different ranges, your dirty boxing into your clinch, and then your knees getting back out. Like, it's beautiful. And being able to mix that with wrestling now, and then grappling and my jiu-jitsu, it feels fantastic. And now I can take control where I want the fight to go. It's pretty dang neat. It's pretty cool.
Did you ever actually compete in a boxing match coming out to Ohio and having that initial interest in it?
No, I've never had a boxing match. It's still something that I'd love to do. I'd love to do kickboxing as well, but no, I haven't had a boxing match, no.
Interesting. We'll have to see if that is on the horizon for Josh Pereira. But I also wanted to ask about the parkour gym. That's definitely, an interesting part of your story. Were you ever involved in parkour in any way?
Yes, I was. My good friend, Ash Whitworth or Christian Whitworth, he was the one who also taught me capoeira as well. Just this was at like kind of like the hype of Conor McGregor as well. That dynamic movement, QMs, quadrupedal movement, just expression of the body, being able to flow between one motion to another seamlessly, and more animalistic movements. And that's one thing that's why I kind of gravitated towards capoeira, because it's such a beautiful martial art. Or once you can combine that into your mixed martial arts, it's quite beautiful. But I still can't do a backflip for crap. Can't do a side flip. Yet again, I really loved the movement, the fluidity.
Do you think that movement and fluidity that you have that background in has kind of set you apart so far in your amateur and now in your early stages of your pro career?
I feel that definitely the movement base has helped me a lot. Yet again, I still have so much more to learn, but just being able to react instead of just anticipating to emotion, like it's helped me out a lot in grappling as well. I love it. I love it. I feel like I do have a little bit of an edge, if anything.
Yeah, you're definitely dynamic there in the cage. I want to ask you about your nickname, Flying Hawaiian. I absolutely love it, and I believe you have many Hawaiian-inspired tattoos as well. How much pride do you have in your background and in your Hawaiian roots?
It's my home. It's the place where I grew up. It's something you can't take away from me. I'm not native Hawaiian, but I'm born and raised. I'm a hapa-haole, half local, half white. My dad's side is from Portugal. Worked on the sugarcane plantation, and my mom's side is from the Philippines. Hawaii is a melting pot. And I know since I moved out here to the mainland, I should my nickname should be the Pale Hawaiian, but hopefully when I visit my family, I'll get my color back. But I take a lot of pride in it. Just looking at all of the fighters and the contin just all of the fighters that come out of Hawaii as well. I hope to be considered as one of the best. I don't want to be the next BJ Penn. I don't want to be the next Max Holloway. I want to be Joshua Pereira. That's it. We started off the Flying Hawaiian as kind of like a filler nickname, and it kind of really took off. So I don't know. Well, we'll see if we can do another nickname, but I don't know. I'm liking it. It really belongs to Soriano, who's an old baseball player from Maui. But yeah, I'll have to reach out to him to see if it'll be okay for me to use it.
No, I love the Flying Hawaiian nickname. I think it really fits you and your fighting style. And you mentioned the other ranks of Hawaiian fighters, the BJ Penns, the Max Holloways, the Dan Iges of the world. When you first
Absolutely.
started in MMA, did you look up to those fighters in a way?
Oh, 100%, 100%. Every single time a Hawaiian fighter wins, we pop off the fireworks over in Waikiki side too. It's awesome. But yeah, I've even looked up to my really good friend, old classmate and good friend Joe Bird as well, who's a fantastic bantamweight, and I'm looking forward to getting some more training with him when I go back. He's also included in Max's training camps as well. But I've always looked up to all of them, especially BJ Penn. Just the athleticism mixed with the technique, that is the combination of a real mixed martial artist, and he's always been an inspiration to me. And he's also super close to my coach Coleman as well, from the Ultimate Fighter days, so that's always cool too.
So, have you ever met BJ Penn? Had any interactions with him?
I've had one run with him. Is we were at the Kaka'ako location of his gym, UFC BJ Penn gym, closer to Ala Moana Mall, and he was just walking around, just like just a normal guy, you know, where we may be fighters, but we don't have to be all, you know, chip on the shoulder all the time. You know, we're just people too. He's just a guy. So why would I have to carry myself as this cocky, arrogant guy? I still have respect for all of my opponents, all of my training partners. So there's no need to like lock horns with anybody, you know?
Was that another kind of like starstruck moment for you? I know you said you felt that way when you met Israel Adesanya at the bar in Ohio.
Of course.
But that moment seeing BJ Penn, a guy that you kind of idolize in a way.
Of course, you know, of course I tried to keep my composure the whole time.
Right.
Shook his hands and yeah, he was just watching everybody and just him being there, just his presence. You could feel it. You could feel him, just all the history and all he's done for the sport.
Another part of your story I wanted to ask about is you said you have at times in your career and in your life gone on the wrong path, whether that be drinking or addictions and things like that. Having a guy like Mark Coleman, who, I mean, his story has been told, he has had problems with addiction in the past as well. I believe he's on 2 years sober now, if I'm getting that right.
Yeah, one and a half years.
Okay, 1.5 years for Mark Coleman. Being around him, has he kind of played a role in your life in terms of that side of things?
Absolutely. Because of him, I don't drink anymore. It's been quite some time, about 6 months or so. And I feel great. Like I don't need that outside influence in my life anymore. Just like him, we can replace that with something else. Spending more time with our loved ones, spending more time with our family, spending more time training. Of course I have those down days where it's like I drive by the bar, or I'm serving tables at where I work at the restaurant, and I'm looking at all the bottles staring back at me, but I'm like, I don't really think I need that in my life anymore. I'll just get a sweet tea with some lemon and just chill, you know, watch some YouTube.
So what always got you on the right path? Going down that wrong path, you said you have gone down that wrong path a couple times in your life. Maybe Mark Coleman was the last person to steer you in the right direction, but was it mixed martial arts? Was it something else that always got you on the right direction in life?
Mixed martial arts, work, my beautiful girlfriend, I think my girlfriend Tiffany really helped me out as well. She was the one picking me up from bars, me being absolutely blasted. And I kind of looked at myself in the mirror, and that's Coleman training and her kind of just turned me into just the student of martial arts now. I don't like outside influence. I don't like and plus I don't want to make a good chunk of change over at the restaurant and blow it all over a weekend just for a couple of hours of fun anymore. That's not fun anymore.
Sure.
But yeah, I never thought I'd ever be out here in Ohio. I never thought I'd ever have the opportunities that I have, but I'm blessed, man. I'm blessed.
Yeah. It sounds like the support system in your life is great, but whether it be your girlfriend, your coaches, your training partners and all that, just curious, you know, moving from Hawaii to Ohio, does your immediate family and like that support group still live in Hawaii?
Yeah, everybody's back home in Hawaii. I'm looking forward to moving back one day, but I have quite a lot of goals that I've set out for myself before I do. I would love to have a place out here in Ohio and then one back home one day as well, but that's my long-term goal. And I am going to complete that however long that it takes.
So they're in Hawaii. Have they ever come out to visit you? Have they ever been to any of your fights?
Yes. My mom and her current husband has been able to come out to one of my fights. They completely surprised me. It was my title defense for B2, and I had just gotten off of a very, very bad sickness. I had still taken the fight. I had won the first three rounds. He'd won the last two. Well, this is another fight that I'd love to get back as well. But they had surprised me, and I just started breaking down. I was like, holy crap. It was quite a moment. I know for a fact if I saw them beforehand, like between the cage or while looking in the crowd, I would have completely lost it and took me out of that fight. But I'm so glad that they came out and visited. It was great. I wish I performed to my full abilities, But you know, hindsight is 20/20, like my dad always says.
Sure. Did that put more pressure on you going into that fight, knowing that family was there for the first time?
I didn't know. I didn't know till after the fight.
Oh, okay.
So thank goodness. Thank goodness they weren't there. They had told me, oh, we're going to be in Vegas. I said, oh, okay, cool. And then afterwards, I have both belts around my shoulders, and I look up, and I'm like, oh, my God. But I feel like if they had told me, like, way before time, I would have been fine. But if I had, like, gotten to the venue and, like, started warming up, and then someone, hey, your mom and her husband's here. Like, oh. And then I kind of probably, like, okay, gotta straighten it out a little bit more, you know?
That's an incredible story, Josh. And once again, we are talking to Josh the Flying Hawaiian Pereira on Forge in Ohio. Let's talk more about your actual fighting career now and your debut at Ohio Combat League 6 in 2020. You lost via rear naked choke. You talked about how you took that fight on just 1 week notice, and maybe that's why you did lose that fight and you weren't experienced in wrestling especially. I know you're much improved since then. Talk to me about the emotions that you felt after that fight and how much stock you initially put into that amateur debut.
My amateur debut, I kind of did it as like a, oh, what the hell kind of thing. And I had a very game opponent, Josh Delgado, stud, and he's actually making his professional debut in boxing. So maybe we'll have that opportunity down the line. But yet again, he comes down to the mortal martial arts every so often. He's more of a training partner and a good friend now. So we'll see. But that's the fight I needed. That's that fire. And that fire still burns inside of me from that fight. I had rocked him with a right hand. This was when I was mainly standing southpaw. I kind of mix it up now. But I had rocked him with a right hand, and it was just like, what do I do? And then he just changed levels on me, and next thing I know, I felt a flash, and I was on my back, you know, and he was in guard. I remember his Velcro coming. This is me sometimes in fights. I can remember a lot of stuff. I remember the Velcro coming out. I remember the tape hanging off a little bit, and the corner of his glove cutting right above the eyebrow, or right on top of my eyelid. But I got back up, I pushed him off, tried to close the distance, and I went for a judo toss, and he just sunk down, took my back, and sunk in and rear naked. And I remember when they raised his hand and I was hanging my head, I was just like, I got to be better. I got to be better. After that, I started getting better, doing everything necessary, doing the things that I hate, but doing it as if I love it. Everything, the footwork, the pads, hitting the bag, skip knees on the bag, nonstop wrestling rounds, Shark Tank rounds, going with Matt for an hour nonstop, just sparring. Just moving around, just flowing. We barely ever take rounds, do rounds. We just spar. We just go. And especially when Coleman's there, the intensity's turned up all the way to 1,000 when he's there, 1,000,000 when he's there. So just training like a champion. They said train like a champion before you get to it, before you become a champion. So I'm still picking up this pace, incorporating even more wrestling now, incorporating even more dynamic footwork. But yet again, I'm a martial artist first and a fighter second. I just love doing this just because I love it so much.
Yeah, and I think that passion for the sport is really important. The attention to detail in that first career fight about the Velcro and the cut and everything like that. I've talked to other fighters on Forge in Ohio, and other fighters are like, yeah, when I step in that cage, everything is just a white blur. I don't remember anything. I just got my hand raised and that was it. Why do you think for you it's quite the opposite and you're just so dialed in there and you remember those just slight details in those stories inside the cage?
I don't know. My dad has photographic memory for like to a T. So maybe I have a little bit of that as well. But like outside of the cage, I feel like I forget everything, you know, but when I'm in there, it just feels like I belong in there. It feels like I should be in there. And I take it all in. I breathe. I'm calm. And it's so weird that the most free that I can feel is locked in a cage with another human being trying to take your head off, you know, but it's. Shouldn't you want to be there? Shouldn't you want to be in that moment, taking it all in? remembering every single feint, remembering every single movement of your opponent, because now that's downloaded into my brain, and now I can use that same trickery or that same motions on another person that has a similar stance, that has a similar fighting style to my last opponent. So I can be like, oh, I've been here before, and now I can act upon almost the same exact stuff and also incorporate the new stuff that I've been working on as well, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, it does. And have you always felt that free in the cage, or is that something that you have kind of progressed over time with?
It's been feeling better and better and better. I've been getting more and more loose, more and more relaxed, more and more creative. Also, being able to use the full professional rule set, now I don't have to hold back when in certain states I wouldn't be able to throw certain shots. Like my last amateur fight for Bizarro Promotions, it was a 35-pound bout, and the guy said he was 5'9", but dude, he was like 5'11". And I remember staring at him. I was like, dude, you're a lot taller. But thankfully, I spar with a lot taller people. And I had hit him with a spinning back kick early into the first round. And I remember I was like, I wanted to throw a head kick because he was curled over. And he started circling away to my right, and I was like, ah, shoot. So I shot in for a really crappy single because I was like, I wanted to throw a kick so bad. Now I don't have to trip myself up and give myself a disadvantage thinking of, oh, okay, I can't do this. Now I can just go right into it.
Yeah, a lot of things open up when you turn pro in terms of what you can do in the cage. How exciting is that for you now that you are pro, that you aren't limited in the cage and can now use elbows and kicks and things like that as weapons in ways that you once couldn't?
Oh, dude, I'm so excited. It's so cool. Being able to flow, it felt as if it was a faucet that I couldn't turn off. Just starting off with a jab, cross, body kick, low kick, inside kick, and then him circling to my left to stay away from my power side, because eventually he stopped circling to his power side because I stopped him with my rear kick in my right hand. So he started circling. So I would step across the center line, spinning back elbow or spinning back kick. And as soon as I started tripping him up, every single little thing made him faint, every single little thing. So then I was able to step into southpaw. Then I can be a little bit more creative. It's super fun. It's the most fun I've ever had.
Right. I want to go back to your amateur fights here for a moment, because you mentioned after that first fight, you improved drastically. And that's exactly what you did, going off for 7 wins and then the 1 draw in there as well. You won 4 belts in 2 different weight classes as an amateur. You won your first title against Mason DeLess in 2021 for Ohio Combat League. You got a rear naked choke just 2 minutes into the fight. What was it like preparing for your first title fight, and how nervous were you going into the cage that night?
Oh, dude, I was terrified. I'll tell you what, that's the most scared I've ever been for a fight on a fight camp ever. Looking at this stud southpaw, dropped my friend Skylar Bray when he dropped down to 25 to unify the 125 and 35 amateur belts. And I was in the crowd. I actually fought that same card too, and he had beaten my friends. And I remember I had ran over to Mason as soon as he got out of the cage, and I was like, I'm gonna fight you one day. And he was like, okay. And then he walked off, and I kept training. And when they had given one of my manager came up and said, hey, you want to fight Mason DeLess for the OCL belts, I was like, am I even ready? And I remember saying, we'll find out. And I remember grappling a lot. I was doing a lot of striking. And the fight started off. We were both southpaw. And yet again, I remember looking, I was like, man, he's tall. He's lanky. He's got reach on me. So he had his hands down low. I had my hands a little higher. We were both in southpaw. I saw him cock back his left elbow, and he shot that left hand. And it glanced off my head, like my forehead, and my left hand landed flush on him, almost turned him around. After that, I engaged the clinch. I landed some knees to him. He had turned, I had put his back on the fence. He had turned me away from the fence, and I saw the opportunity, reached down for a single, and then I tripped him, got him into side control. He had me in like a weird side guillotine, and I started kneeing him to the body. He tried to use uses butterfly, like butterfly hooks, and try and like flip me over. But I stood up out of it, got a few shots in. He turned his back towards me, had grabbed his back, tripped him over, took his back, got a couple more shots in, got the rear naked choke, and that was it. Everybody was telling me, even my friend Cam Sullivan, he trains with Tucker Rogers, who trains over at Stout as well. And they were all telling me, don't go to the ground with him. He's a stud. Don't go to the ground with him. He's dangerous. And I was like, if I want to be the best fighter, I have to beat people at what they're best at. He's a great striker. He's a great grappler. I wanted to test myself, and I took it to the ground. I saw that opportunity. And also, we were both very, very sick for this fight. He had a sinus infection, and I had gotten bitten by a brown recluse, and I was on antibiotics. So maybe that is a fight that we can see down the line again. But yet again, we train every so often, so we'll see. Always looking for, like Coleman always says, dominate every single position that you are in. Dominate, dominate, dominate. And that's what I always look for, and that's what I always look to do.
Yeah, and you were able to dominate him in the position that he was best at. I love that line. And maybe getting revenge for your friend as well. That was the first championship under your belt. I know it's an amateur belt, but knowing your backstory, how accomplished did you feel when that OCL championship was put around your waist?
It didn't feel real. It really didn't. I was a 3% underdog to his 97%.
Wow.
A lot of people were counting me out. Everybody on Tapology, but I put in the hours, and I always look to prove people wrong, I guess. Or always look to shock the world, and hopefully and definitely I will shock the world one day.
Yeah, I look forward to it. You also mentioned going into that fight that there was some fear involved. Is that something common for you to actually have fear going into some fights, or was it mainly just that one against Deless?
That was the one that had scared me the most. They all scare me, but it's almost to the extent of I can't tell the difference between me being scared, me being nervous, and me being excited anymore. They kind of all melt together. And backstage, when we're warming up, I have a thousand millions of what ifs going through my head. What if this? What if that? But my training partner, Miles Robinson, once told me that even if you lose, even if you get embarrassed, everything that you care about will be okay. So I kind of took that to heart. Everything will be okay. My girlfriend's still going to be here. My family's still going to love and support me. But every single step I take towards that cage, every single step, it's almost like I'm taking in that energy, and I'm taking in every person's energy that's in that building or watching. And I, by the time I kneel down in that cage, pick up the sand and rub it between my hands and stand back up, I am unbeatable.
Well, that's one hell of a line there from Miles Robinson, who was the first guest on Forge in Ohio. And you going into the cage, is that when, you know, that switch flips from you having those what ifs in your mind to being that unstoppable fighter?
Yes. And yet again, Miles Robinson, he says that's when he shows up, and he showed up. He always shows up. He always shows up. As long as you have confidence in your training, as long as you have confidence in your training partners and your coaches and the game plan, you are unbeatable. And once you see them take one step back, you win.
That's one hell of a line there, Josh. I wanted to ask you about the ending sequence of your fight against Jalen McIntyre. You threw a hook kick from hell in the second round, nearly finished the fight with ground and pound afterward, then eventually got a standing guillotine. Tell me more about the progression of that vicious sequence to end the fight.
Yeah, we had seen in his training that he doesn't really check a lot of kicks. So if he's circling to my power side, low kick right there, calf kick, low kick. Wrap that shin right across his leg, and eventually you start to see him wince. And then he started checking. He started feinting the check every single time I would feint. So fake low, go high. I cut open I let go of a question mark kick, fainted low, went high, had a cut right above his left eyebrow. I thought they were going to end the fight. The cut looked really bad, but He's one of the toughest SOBs I have ever fought, and I have so much respect. I have so much respect for all of my opponents. But Jalen, he took a shot from hell. That's that Mia Luna de Contacho, a spinning back kick, a capoeira style kick where you put your hands on the ground and have all of that force focus onto that heel. I landed closer to the ball of the foot, but he was still severely rocked. I landed in southpaw, stepped back in with a hook cross, took him down with a trip. I thought it was going to be over with the ground and pound, but I must have woken him back up or something. But he started trying to grab for a leg, brawled on him. I went for a 10 finger choke at first. He ripped that out, and I just went deep guillotine. And then I tried to transition into a high elbow guillotine. And then it was kind of like a weird, like ninja choke guillotine, but it got the job done. And I remember just screaming at the top of my lungs, just letting it all out, letting it all out. Once they gave me that belt, I was like, man, okay, now we're getting somewhere. Now we're going somewhere with this. And right back to the gym right after that. I bruised up my foot pretty good. Jalen had actually, I remember looking in the mirror, I was like, is my nose broken? And I stayed away from the gym for a little bit. But yeah, just always looking to improve every single day.
Was that the first and maybe only time you've actually hit that exact kick that you were talking about in that fight?
Yeah, that was the first time I hit that kick. I had flashed it in my first amateur fight, and also against Ahmad Bates, and also I had flashed it against shoot, what's his name? It was my fourth fight, and he was a very strong wrestler, state champ wrestler out of Kentucky. And I had thrown it, and he looked at me as if that landed, that would have been over. And then he just shot immediately right after that. I sprawled. But yeah, I'm just working on it nonstop with my Muay Thai coach, Shane Nietzsche, getting the timing down right. And my timing is only going to get better and better from here.
What did you learn most about yourself as an amateur fighter, whether it be something personal or knowing that you have the talent to actually make a career out of this?
I think it was when I got my first belt. I was like, okay, now we can actually, maybe I can actually do something with this. Maybe I can actually be a professional athlete. Maybe I can do all of these things. And I'm not trying to do anything anymore. I'm doing it, and I am gonna keep doing it.
You went 7-1-1 as an amateur and you won four titles along the way. Did you know at that time that you were ready to turn pro?
Yes, I had originally was in talks to going pro after my title defense for B2, and after that went to a draw. I still retain the belt yet again. Marco Gamini, stud, stud, stud. He's also undefeated as well as a professional. But I didn't want to go pro off of that. I wanted to test myself again, and the only way that I saw that was to take another fight. I was taking a little bit of a break, and then Rick, my manager, comes up and says, "Hey, would you like to fight at 35 against the Mayans, Tony Lichtenberger?" And he was on a two-fight tear, really strong boxing, really crispy boxing. And I was like, "Okay, let's do it." And the Mayans are the only guys that have beaten me yet again, Josh Delgado, and all of them up there, studs, Antonio, Mexican Muscle, everybody up there. And Nicole Castillo, who's always in charge of the matchmaking around here. So of course you can't say no to Nicole. But yeah, I saw that as a okay, let's get this team back. And took the fight. I had actually come in like 134.3. I didn't even have to cut for that camp. Just me being in fight camp allows me to be at 35. And I don't think I'll be going to 35 anytime soon because I am a very small 35er and I'm a decently sized 25er. But yeah, my home will be 25 as a pro. But I took that fight against Tony as a, I want to showcase what I can do. that last fight, if I was healthy, would have been different. But here, I'm healthy, I'm strong, I'm fighting at my natural weight, don't have to cut that much, and I'll show everybody. I'll beat the bigger guy. I'll beat the guy that's 5'11".
In that fight against Tony, do you feel like you got your revenge in that fight for your first loss by defeating a guy from the Mayans from the same gym?
Yeah, I got them back a little, and they're always trying to invite me out to come train with them, and I will train with them one day. I saw that as, okay, punch my ticket, one more belt, and time to enter the pro ranks, see where we can go from here.
Yeah, let's get to that most recent fight and your win in your professional debut against Greg Spearman on January 7th. What were the nerves and emotions like going into your pro debut?
Greg Spearman, I know with his professional record being 0-5 now, but going into this fight, he was 7-3-1 as an amateur. He had fought some of the best regional talent, which are also the top prospects in the sport now. Look at Mo Miller. Look at all these other fighters that have fought him. So I saw this as a perfect opportunity to really test myself against a guy that's went the distance with all of these great fighters. So, yeah, we had actually originally were going to go pro for OCL or Ohio Combat League for an earlier date. And my opponent for that pulled out because he had a broken hand. And then we were looking to fight for 247 out of Pennsylvania. And my opponent showed up fairly above the flyweight limit. And he didn't want to try and cut down. I still have respect for him. He's been talking some crap over Instagram and stuff.
Yeah, that maybe being Orlando Ortega?
Orlando Ortega, yes.
Okay.
Lanky kickboxer, world-class kickboxer, great wrestling defense. And he came in, I think it was 31, but by the time he had come back within that hour time frame that they gave him, he was only 29. Didn't even try. I was 124.5. Didn't even look like he was trying at all. And the commission and me came to an agreement. We said, if you can get down to 27, then we can go. And he's like, no, I'm not going to cut. And he didn't. So the fight was scrapped. And it was going to be Immortal versus Jackson Wink / their gym out of New York. But my teammate, Lucas Siebert, absolutely picked apart his teammate. We were looking to do the same with Ortega. But that opportunity did not arise. And we went and we moved on. We were looking at quite a few names for Ohio Combat League 23, and none of them got back to us. There were injuries, messed up foot, other things. We had tried to get onto the December 17th card for B2 in Kentucky, and I actually got cracked by Matt pretty good, and I got a concussion, and so I had to sit out of that one. And I thought we were going to miss the January 7th card. But about 2.5 weeks out, they come to us and say, hey, we got Greg Spearman. And we looked at his record and we're like, okay, let's do this. Let's do this. He's stepping in on short notice and wants to fight me. Let's do this. And yeah, signed the contract. And the rest is part of my fight history now.
Yeah, you kind of dominated Spearman out there. Ohio Combat League awarded you with a Performance of the Night award, and you nearly knocked him out with a nasty kick to the body. Your work was simply put out on full display that night in the casino. Looking back at it, what do you think about your performance?
I still look at it, and there's a lot of things that I can improve on. But what I did that night, I am happy with myself. I show humility and respect to all of my opponents. I let my opponent pick up his mouth guard after knocking it out with a spinning back kick that landed flush, and he was grabbing his body. I could have capitalized on that, but I'm always down to get down. So I told him, put it back in, and we started throwing again.
Have you always been that respectful of your opponents? Even like Ortega, who refused to make weight, you still said that you had some respect for that man. Have you always been that way?
Yeah, absolutely. It started with judo, always bowing in and out. And I just kind of brought that with me no matter what. Sparring sessions, my boxing sparring, and all my friends at the boxing club are looking at me like, oh, why are you doing this karate stuff? And here I am just sitting in the pocket, ready, after cracking or getting cracked or whatever, I'm always like, okay, let's keep it going. But yeah, I always show respect. The one thing that I would say, Orlando had texted me over Instagram, and I had messaged him back, kind of like crapped on him a little bit, which is very out of pocket for me. But I'll always show everybody respect.
Once again, this is Josh the Flying Hawaiian Pereira with us on Forged in Ohio. You're now a 1-0 professional mixed martial artist. I'm sure that sounds fantastic to hear, but I know that your goals are much higher. You know, you mentioned that before. What are some of those goals that you have in your career, regardless of how big or small they may be?
I just want to fight. That's it. I just want to give it my all. That's what I want to do. No matter how far I go, even if it's just on the regional circuit or if I get to compete on the world stage one day, I just want to give it my all. That is my goal.
Yeah, I think that's really commendable. Usually when I ask that question, I always get, you know, wanting to be a world champion, but even just being the best that you can be, I think that's a great goal to have. Have you had time to think about what you want next and when you'd like to get back in the cage?
Yeah, I've had a lot of time on that. My manager said we may have a possible opportunity with LFA, possibly in May or June. I'm also going to go visit back home for about a month in March, get some well-deserved family time in, and not well-deserved. I feel like I don't deserve as much, but if someone says I deserve, of course I'll go for it. But I feel that I need to get some family time in, yet again get my color back. I'm more of the pale Hawaiian now, and train with my friends back home. Even my friend Alan Liu, who's originally from Stout, is teaching over at the UFC gym. So I'm looking forward to getting someone work with all of those killers back home.
Yeah, LFA, that's a big deal. I mean, is that kind of where you want to go next for just your second professional fight?
We'll see. We'll see. I know 247. We're always cool with them. We'll see. If I know they have something coming up in June as well. So we'll see. We will see. I just want to perform and give the fans something fun and have fun myself.
You were a very active amateur fighter. Is this something that you plan on continuing as a professional, or now that you're in the pros and these fights mean that much more, you might plan on taking a little bit slower?
We'll see. We'll see. I feel healthy. I'm still recovering from a bit of an ankle injury. Greg had checked one of my switch kicks, and I remember it going numb in the thigh, and I was like, oh, okay. More boxing then. And or just have to set it up a little better. And so it's a little swollen, but nothing too bad. I'm still training. Just got done training this morning as well. But yeah, we'll see. We'll see. Maybe if there's something before I go visit my family, maybe we'll jump on that. We will see.
That's definitely intriguing. I think I speak for many when I say that we're looking forward to getting you back in the cage. Before we wrap up, anything you want to shout out in terms of social media handles or sponsorships?
Yeah, absolutely. Come give me a follow on The Real Josh Pereira on Instagram. And I want to give a huge shout out to my team over at Immortal Martial Arts, my training partners over at Stout and Pilger's Old School Boxing, Hawaii Elite, BJ Penn, or UFC BJ Penn Gym in Kailua and Kaka'ako, my coaches, Mark Coleman, Matt Brown, Shane Nietzsche, Harrison, Paco, Jimmy Lobo, Cameron Knight, my sponsors, Thrax THC. I'm actually going to take one of those gummies now. Delta 8 gummies, great. And Rude Dog Bar and Grill, DB Trains, Gym Extreme, Immortal Coffee, Immortal Diet Plan, and Samson's brand. Yeah, that'll do it.
Yeah, well, there you have it. I've heard that Immortal Coffee is pretty good.
It is absolutely fantastic, man. Give it a try.
Yeah, will do. Thanks again, Josh, for joining me on Forge in Ohio. It was a privilege talking to you, hearing about your story, and even studying the grind that has been your MMA career since 2020. Before I let you go, I know you're from Hawaii, but I know you got some Ohio blood in you. I always end interviews with an OHIO chant. So, OH?
I-O.
Thanks, Josh. Good luck with training. Enjoy the much-deserved time with your family. I can't wait to see what's next for you. I truly think the sky is the limit here, man, and hopefully we'll talk again soon.
Thank you, Jake. Thank you so much for having me. Mahalo, my brother. Thank you.
That was Josh the Flying Hawaiian Pereira, the widely successful and multi-champ amateur fighter turned 1-0 pro. These interviews always hit different when I'm speaking to a pro, knowing that they could very well be 2-3 fights away from being on all of our TVs one day. And I could certainly see that being the case for Josh the Flying Hawaiian Pereira. Once again, check out the new Instagram page dedicated to this podcast at Forge in Ohio, and support the podcast in other ways as well by rating the program 5 stars, downloading episodes, and subscribing for all the latest interviews. I've been your host, Jake Murin, and this was Forged in Ohio.